the Turbine Toucan. When will we see it at an air show near you? I'm Paul Plack, and this is Aero News. Welcome into this Aero News special feature, and thanks for downloading us today. My guest is David Kervanen, who is the founder and CEO of Infinity Entertainment Incorporated. In the aircraft world, Infinity Entertainment is known primarily as the developer of the Turbine Toucan, which is a 1,650-pound biplane, aerobatic biplane, with 750 horsepower and almost 3,000 pounds of thrust. So it's going to be a remarkable aircraft when you get to see it in an air show near you. We last talked to Dave when the Turbine Toucan had first made its flight, or made its first flight, I should say. And we're here to do some catching up because, Dave, we had kind of hoped to see you at air shows by now, but I think you're finding out what a lot of developers do, and that is that getting one of these things shrink-wrapped and in the package is certainly tougher than thinking it up.
Right, right. Well, Paul, first off, I'd just like to thank you for having us and also your listeners.
You had originally, when we last talked, you had just made the first flight. You were going to do some additional testing, which was going to involve a few hours, and then you're going to have the processes ahead of finding sponsorship and developing an air show routine. And I think Ken Erickson was going to be tasked with that part of it. Tell us, first of all, if you guys have thoroughly now explored the flight envelope of the Turbine Toucan.
You know, we've explored about 60% of it. And I say that because there's so many things that you can do in the vertical that just haven't been explored. A combination of maneuvers or routines that are only limited now by your imagination.
Mm-hmm.
And some of those we're going to share with you in a few minutes. But we have gone through all the test phase with regard to all the systems and about 90% of your standard aerobatic maneuvers. So we're pretty well covered in that. As we mentioned before, Dave Morris did the initial flight test. He did between 6 and 10 flights, got us up to about 15 or 20 hours of total flight time before those duties were transferred over to Ken Erickson. And also, I'd like to take this opportunity to also, about a year and a half or a year ago, we really couldn't come out and say, hey, guess what, Ken Erickson is going to be our primary air show pilot and our chief pilot as well, and we're really excited about him being involved in the team. He obviously, as you know, is Sean Tucker's chief pilot and has been with Sean for about 10 years,
mm-hmm.
and he embodies all the same kind of standards, you know, that Sean does in terms of ethics and work standards and safety. So we're really excited to have him on board, and he's really going to take this whole program to the next level, aerobatically speaking. He's also very, very good friends with Wayne Hanley, and so Wayne's been, you know, they've been having dialogue about, you know, how to best fly this plane, because Wayne is the only other one aerobatically that's flown a positive thrust to weight ratio aircraft.
Well, and this one goes way past just being positive thrust to weight. This has got like a 1.5 times as much thrust as it does weight, and that's with a pilot and fuel on board. And I think you made the comment back in May last year that the number of people who have flown an aircraft with that attribute is smaller than the number of people who have walked on the moon.
and that's especially true. And with a propeller-driven aircraft, that's even a smaller number. There's only probably 5 or 6 people. If you count in the F-22s and the F-35s and those sort of things, it starts to add up a little bit. But in this domain, aerobatically speaking, yeah, you're right.
All right. Now, you, among the technical issues that I did read in your going back through your blog that you did encounter in getting this aircraft to where it is now, is that you found that the first approach you took to instrumentation in the plane didn't present the engine data in a format that was able to be read as quickly as events unfold when you try to take off with this thing.
Right. It's a unique, it's kind of a quality problem.
Yeah.
We have so much thrust. And the lack of inertia, what was happening was we had these transitory spikes where we spool it up, brake release, and within about 2 seconds, we're almost at 100 miles an hour.
Wow.
And, yeah, it's pretty incredible. And I actually even got to witness that firsthand myself. And it is pretty amazing. But what happens in the process is we have these transitory spikes where we are actually exceeding N1 and N2 and ITT. It all goes through the roof.
Mm-hmm.
The thing is that nobody caught it, and because it happened so quickly. And until we downloaded data from our TSLM, we never even saw it. So all of a sudden, this became a big issue in terms of how, you know, to best manage the energy, and we have to be a little bit less aggressive about the takeoff, because we were only doing between 50 and 75 foot ground roll before we were airborne and going into the pure vertical. So we have to rearrange our thinking. But in the process of that, with an overspeed, we were down for a couple of months because we decided it would be best to tear the engine completely apart, make sure that everything is okay, and also, you know, give us an opportunity now that we have some aerobatics under our belt too, because rarely do these engines see aerobatic environments.
Right.
To, just to take a look at it, and make sure everything's good. And it was an expensive proposition, but all in all, it was really worthwhile, and it's a sort of a peace of mind for us. So that was one of our bigger learning hurdles that set us back probably 3 or 4 months.
Well, it was fun. It's been fun reading on your blog, David, about some of the things that are involved in testing this aircraft. I know that you have in mind to make an assault, which will no doubt be successful, on some long-standing time to climb and other records with the Turbine Toucan. And in particular, I got a big kick out of reading your account of how when the plane was making a practice climb to 10,000 feet, not only was it way, way, way below the official record for your class, but you reached 10,000 feet and were still over the runway.
Yeah, that was, and you know, and we did this, we were going back from King City back to our home base in San Carlos, just Northern California. So we loaded up full fuel, and we just decided, you know, since we're there, we might as well just take a stab at it, just to get an initial profile of what this will do. And we had about an extra 400 pounds of fuel on board than we would if we did a record attempt. And also we flew probably a higher profile angle than we normally would. We took most of the wing loading, you know, off, and it was mostly on the propeller. So we could probably still do a lot better. But that said, we did 0 to 10,000 feet in about 2 minutes, which shatters our class record, which was done in 3 minutes and 30 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just, you know, we almost knocked that out of the park. But on top of that, by the time I pushed over the top at 10,000, I still wasn't over the end of the runway, which is a 4,400 foot runway. So that was pretty cool.
That's you know, you're talking about experiences that we most people don't even imagine having in an aircraft, maybe in a spacecraft. But this is going to be a fun thing to watch. Tell us a little bit before we go to our break here. After the break, I want to talk a little bit about the process of finding sponsorship for this thing and getting it involved in the airshow circuit, because I think that's an interesting story, too. But before we go to break, tell us about your visit from Kermit Weeks. That sounded very interesting.
You know, it was kind of a fluke thing. Willie Turner at the Hiller Aviation Museum, which is actually located on the same airport that we are, which is San Carlos, Kermit came over to visit Willie for a while, and we were just having coffee, and Willie came up to me and said, "Hey, I want you to meet somebody that I think might be interested in the airplane." I've never met Kermit, so I don't exactly know what he looks like, but I've been to his Fantasy of Flight, and I know all about him. But anyhow, so I met, you know, I turned around, and Kermit Weeks, wow, okay. And so Willie said, "Well, you know, I really like to share the airplane with you," and I think Kermit looked, you know, when we started to explain what the airplane is, I think Kermit had this feeling, here's a nut that put a turbine on a pit,
yeah,
kind of thing. And so I think, you know, and then it was a 5-minute drive from the coffee shop over to our hangar. And I think during that 5-minute drive, I think his expectations were pretty low.
Yeah,
I mean, he's
yeah.
seen it, he's been there, done there, seen it all. And so he got out of the car, and I think this was one of, he was just thinking this is going to be a boondoggle. And but you know what, the graciousness of, you know, he didn't want to be rude to Willie, I think was kind of the, you know, the frame of mind he was at until
right.
we opened the hangar door, and I think his mouth just dropped wide open. And I think he was really, he got quite excited, and he walked around the airplane a couple of times, and it's hard to blow him away. I mean, he's been there, done it, seen it all. He's been on the U.S. world, you know, U.S. aerobatic team. So he asked some very, very sophisticated questions about polar moments, how this airplane handles, you know, in flat spins, and other very obscure questions that only a few people have ever asked us. So I knew he kind of got what this program was all about, and I think he was very, very excited in the end of what he saw.
Well, now, you've talked about some of the things unique to the aircraft. Using a turbine in an aerobatic aircraft has some potential pitfalls. Have you encountered any of those? I mean, you mentioned the overspeed and the inlet temperature issues and things like that, and having to tear it down to make sure everything was okay. Have you gotten into parts of the envelope yet where some of the inertial drawbacks are going to come to play, where you can do some things with a piston engine that just don't work out well if you try to do them with a turbine?
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, you know, we'll never compete with an unlimited aerobatic airplane, piston-driven airplane, because the response times are so quick. Getting in and out of a tumble, you know, requires huge throttle responses, you know, and the turbine really has to spool up. So it has to be flown entirely different. But that said, I mean, what we're doing and what our program's all about is so very different that it really doesn't matter. We anticipate the spool up. We build it into the routine. We are really trying to create sort of a more elegant Bob Hoover-esque type of air show, but then show off all the vertical capabilities of the airplane. In other words, differentiate ourselves from the monoplanes that are flying unlimited, you know, doing tumbles and that sort of thing. We're really not about that. We're actually trying to complement what they're doing. So we're not trying to go after that. I don't want to say that market, but that program.
Well, I have to tell you, and I hope this doesn't come off as a brush against anyone, but I think what the airshow circuit could really use right now is somebody with a biplane who's doing something different.
You know, it's really the rationale for why we got into this was because we saw an opportunity. You know, if you look at it purely from, and I come from a marketing background, if you look at this purely from a marketing objectivity, you'd realize that there's a lot of parity products out there. If you consider performers, you know, airshow products, whether it's Kirby or Mike or Patty or Bill Stein or, you know, some of the other really great pilots,
mm-hmm.
To 95% of the people attending air shows, and those they're very unsophisticated. With regard to aviation,
right.
I don't mean in generality. I just mean you know they don't really know what they're looking at
mm-hmm.
necessarily when they're going through all these tumbles and gyrations, and so to them it all starts to look very very similar. They have a very hard time distinguishing the difference between pilots and you know and performances. Now that's not true of your you know, your airshow fanatics. Those guys know every single maneuver, whether it's an outside or an inside snap or what have you. But we're not catering to that 5%. We're catering to the 95% because we think that makes more sense. So what we found out was, you know, if you park an $80,000 Christian Eagle next to an Edge 540, probably three or four times the cost, you know, you look at the average person, the first plane that they're going to walk to is the little biplane
mm-hmm.
because it's cute. It has there's sort of this romantic component of it, and it's engaging and warm and you know kind of friendly looking, and it just has this nostalgic component to it. And so we thought, you know, because Sean and Jim before he passed, you know, were the really two elite level biplane acts out there. We thought that was a natural course, and then coupling a turboprop, we obviously did not want to recreate what Wayne Hanley had already done. That's Wayne's thing, and we wanted to differentiate ourselves again from what he had done. And so that's sort of how this whole thing evolved. But the other side of it was, with these 95% of the people, if we do the same thing everybody else does, I think that would be a pretty boring proposition. So when I heard about Wayne Hanley's Turbo Raven, you know, 5 years ago, I was really, really motivated to learn more about it because it was so differentiated, what it did, how it performed, how it looked, and also how it sounds. A lot of people get a huge kick when we spool the airplane up and start it. They just can't believe that's coming out of a biplane.
Right, right.
Got a very sexy sound to it. And so it has a lot of appeal, you know, to the masses that a lot of other airplanes won't have.
Well, David, before we wander too much deeper into the marketing story on this airplane, we need to take a break, but we'll be back in a moment. My guest is David Kervanen, who is the founder and CEO of Infinity Entertainment Incorporated. We'll be back in a moment. I'm Paul Plack. You're listening to a special feature from Aero News.
Uncramp your style in a new Citation CJ2 Plus from Cessna. Now with integrated ProLine 21 avionics, FADEC, and a restyled cockpit and cabin. In the CJ2 Plus, you'll carry more payload than you could in the original CJ2. You'll climb and cruise faster. You'll have the freedom to use even shorter runways, and you'll do it all on less fuel. For a sure thing, call 1-800 for Cessna.
Diamond's DA-42 Twin Star is General Aviation's ultimate flying machine. Fly fast with the confidence of a twin for the cost of a single. Go direct over water or rugged terrain and cover great distances in the first and only piston aircraft with an advanced airframe, avionics, and engines. The DA-42 gives you options you've never had before, including the Garmin G1000 and known ice protection. Go where you want, when you want, fast and for less. Visit Diamond on the web at www.diamondair.com or call 888-359-3220.
Welcome back to the Aero News Special Feature. I'm Paul Plack, talking with David Kervinen, the founder of Infinity Entertainment Incorporated, a company that was designed to leverage David's event marketing background and a very remarkable airplane called the Turbine Toucan into a new project that will bring some very entertaining displays to air shows, we hope, in the very near future. David, we started into the marketing aspects of this project, and so I want to expand on that a little bit. A lot of air shows have been pinched really hard in the budget this year, so I think that you may be onto something. When we spoke last year, you said that your goal was to create a business model which allowed you to bring the Turbine Toucan to an air show at no cost to the air show, underwritten completely by sponsors. How are you feeling about that as a plan now that we've seen $7 Jet A and $5.50 Avgas?
You know, I think it's truer now than it's ever been. You know, air show performers up to now, 95% of them have been subsidizing the air show business, whether it through very inexpensive, you know, some of the newer air show performers that are coming on board, you know, charge between $2,000 or $3,000 for a show. I mean, that doesn't even break the surface of their cost, their annual cost.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then it just goes up exponentially from there, depending upon the type of aircraft you're operating. If you're operating an F-86 or something like that, I just couldn't even imagine what the fuel bill would cost. On the practice side of things, now they might provide fuel for you once you get there, but you know, there's hundreds of hours that go into, you know, preparing for an air show routine. So how do you recover that cost? So in a sense, to many, the air show industry has been a hobby.
Mm-hmm.
Not to everybody, but to a lot. And I can count on one hand the level of elite performers that generate 100% of their revenue or salary from the air show business.
Right.
So I think in order to raise the bar, and I think Sean Tucker is a perfect example of that bar being raised, sponsorship provides a lot of things. Not only does it subsidize the event organizer, in other words, reduces his or her overall cost for the production, it also establishes a lot of other things. Safety being one. In other words, you know, you don't skimp on fuel. We plan on flying every day in between air shows,
mm-hmm.
and keeping current, keeping up. That's a lot of fuel. The cost of insurance, having a support airplane, having a full-time crew that inspects the airplane before and after every single flight. There's all these kind of things that add a component of safety that you can't if you don't have the correct capital. So I think from that standpoint, it's a good thing, too. And it also, you know, there's argument to be said, and this is a very, very tough, I think, touchy subject, especially if you pick up, Air Show News or ICAS's Air Show mm-hmm. magazine. There are a lot of people that are trying to earn a living without a sponsorship, arguing about people like ourselves who are looking at doing this from a sponsored as saying that we're eating them alive because they can't compete with free.
Right.
So, but I think that the quality of the entertainment that you get when you are subsidized, you know, by a Fortune 1000 company, I think overrides the internal bickering of the airshow business. In other words, you know, every other motorsport has evolved to exclusively include sponsorship. And the bar has already been raised. If you look at NHRA, you look at NASCAR, you look at F1, you look at any other motorsport in the world, and everything is hugely subsidized by sponsors.
If you look at the debut of the Rocket Racing League at Oshkosh this year, they had their first sponsor written on the wings for that.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, and that's huge. And I think that's the direction it's going, and I think that's the way it needs to go, because then at some point, right now, we don't have a sanctioned body. I mean, and there's pros and cons to that.
Mm-hmm.
But ultimately, it raises the bar on so many different levels. Like, one of the things that we're trying to do that I don't think anybody else in the airshow business is doing now is we're providing for our sponsor not only an airplane, not only a support airplane, but also a hospitality tractor trailer. The hospitality tractor trailer is going to be hopefully one of the focal points with regard to the static display portion of everybody's airshow, you know,
mm-hmm.
whether it's military hardware, whatever. So, and what this does is this provides sort of on par what you would get if you went to an NHRA race where you could go walk around and you could talk to the crew members, you know, the driver, and get to see all the pit equipment. We plan on bringing a lot of support equipment on the road for us at each and every venue. So that's one thing that really differentiates what we're all about. And I think, again, that's really good for the event organizer. It's also really good for our title sponsor, because at least right now, nobody else is doing anything like that. So that being a highly differentiated aircraft and also with regard to a static display and the tractor trailer and everything that goes with that, I think it makes for a pretty compelling display, especially if it doesn't cost anybody anything.
Well, I think you've hit on something that's going to be an issue in the future, because there's an issue separate from whether it's hard on beginning performers to compete against free, as you call it, but I think there's also something the industry has to be careful about, and that is that it doesn't pull the rug out from under its farm team system, where, you know, there's no development ground for the people who will eventually work their way up to the ranks where sponsorship becomes available. We're about out of time, David. Let me ask you, you have gotten close, you've told me in confidence before we started this interview, on a couple of sponsorships, and I don't want to reveal details of anything you have in progress. But one of the things I did find interesting is you've already had somebody buy the rights to recreate the Turbine Toucan in a radio-controlled model.
And again, in a sense, this kind of goes back to market data. What we realized was, and this is some of this is ICAST data, but also some of this is surveys that we have initiated, but up to 20% of at-venue attendees that go to shows where we've done surveys, or ICAST has done surveys, 17 to 20% of them are RC enthusiasts. That's huge.
That's big.
Yeah, so in a way, we also coupled ourselves with one of the best RC guys on the planet. His name is Kike Samanzini. And he is the godfather of 3D aerobatics. This is the one time that 3D, that RC airplanes have actually kind of outpaced full-scale airplanes in terms of their thrust-to-weight ratio. So he's been flying 3D for years, where we're now just kind of on the cusp of getting involved in that. So having him on board as part of our overall marketing team or marketing objective, he's fantastic. He represents worldwide distribution, scale, you know, what they call ARFs, or almost ready to fly models, worldwide. And he's going to be developing a number of sizing kits and also power plants. One's going to be electric, one's going to be gas, and I think one is going to be actually turbine powered, of all things.
Well, that's neat.
Yeah, that'll be pretty cool. So yeah, we're really, really excited about that and supporting him and getting him started on that.
Well, David, you've got a fascinating project. If nothing else, you're fun to report on.
We're working on an ascending flat spin, if you can imagine.
Wow.
In other words, get the airplane spinning, bring the nose up, and have it ascend, having a flat spin ascend. We've been working really hard on this, and we think we're close, and we think this might be part of our routine.
We really look forward to getting the chance to see it at an air show sometime next year, and stay in touch.
Great. I appreciate it.
My guest has been David Kurvinen, who is the CEO of Infinity Entertainment Incorporated, and we've been talking about the Turbine Toucan. If you want to know more, find him at www.turbinetoucan.com. You've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. Find us on the web at www.aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.